Reliable information about restoring the menses was scarce. Regular doctors wouldn't provide it, obscenity laws prevented it from being published, and the experienced women of the community who might have counseled Florence had taken their wisdom to the grave. As I walk through the cemetery in summer, my boots make impressions in the soil. The ground is lumpy, damp, and thick with daylilies that never bloom because of the shade. I wonder how many bones are buried beneath me. I wonder where Nancy lies. And I wonder what she'd think of my portrayal of her, this marker I've created in place of a headstone. I remember the eavesdropping woman's comment.
That Nancy must have been something else.
If we crossed paths at the Historical Society today, after all I've learned, I wouldn't hesitate to speak up. I'd point out that her judgment is rooted in misapprehensions of the 21st century. Nancy's family and neighbors must have found her death tragic. The women who stood by as her casket was lowered might have thought,
"Poor dear."
Maybe even,
"It could have been any one of us."
But they wouldn't have thought the reason for her death shameful, any more than modern women would disparage a friend for being on the pill. Nancy Ann Harris wasn't something else, not for her time. Although the doctor's footnote to her death was exceptional, she was simply an ordinary woman, if more honest than the other women whose deaths he'd attended.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Safer Than Childbirth by Tamara Dean. The show was produced at KFAI in Minneapolis. Contributors this week included Chris Watkins, Jim Bindas, Anna O'Connor, and myself, David Klein. Special thanks to the editors of the magazine The American Scholar, where Safer Than Childbirth first appeared. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder,
board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
In the studio today, I have from Disability Emergency Management Advisory Council, Leanne and Shelley. Good to have the two of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Do you mind going first, Shelley?
No, I don't mind. My name is Shelley Emery, and I am a member of Oregon's Disability Emergency Management Advisory Council, and I serve on its communications committee. A little bit about me. Well, I have been working for quite a few years with the Oregon's State Independent Living Council, and in that capacity been really working to see something like this advisory council be stood up in Oregon. And so I was helping in the background with getting things going, and after it got started, then I became a member.
Thank you. Leanne, do you mind giving us a little bit of who you are?
Certainly, John. My name is Leanne Ivers. I am the co-chair the Disability Emergency Management Advisory Council. I'll just call it DMAC, just so that you're aware. I'm a hearing aid user and am connected to my computer via Bluetooth. Any type of Zoom meeting or Microsoft Team meetings, I'm used to hearing clicking static type noise. It just is what it is. My involvement with DMAC stems from the fact that I'm a person with a disability, in fact, several of them. And that's my whole goal is with DMAC, is just to try and help make things better for people like myself or like older citizens who are losing their hearing or maybe just don't move around as well anymore.
Yeah. Shall we just get right into it? I'm just going to ask my second question here is, so how are you all going to save me when an emergency comes?
John, you asked a very good question. For a person with functional and affect needs or a disability, that very often is the question. Should the government come in and save me in a disaster? Well, that would be a very nice thing. Here's the reality that sometimes we as individuals don't think about, or even as families, whether we're non-disabled or don't have challenges, or if we do. We actually have very few first responders to the number of us who are not first responders, who are actually stuck in this situation and quote unquote waiting for rescue. So really, it's on each and every one of us to try and do what we can, and I do emphasize that part, to be prepared so that if something happens, like the big earthquake that's predicted, it kind of has a name right now, Cascadia, as far as the planning community goes. Right now, the emphasis is to try and do what you can to prepare reasonably for this. Take care of yourself for upwards of 72 hours, even as much as a week or more, depending on where you're at, what your circumstances are. That said, DMAC's focus is to not only encourage the various special needs communities to prepare as much as they can for themselves, but we're also encouraging state-level emergency response efforts and trying to help them understand how to include functional and affect needs in their planning. So that if, say, we had a major earthquake happen tomorrow, perhaps the emergency response team will be better able to help those of us that might need that extra help in the situation to not be impacted so severely. Shelley, would you have any additional thoughts on this?
Thanks, Leanne. Yeah, I do. One thing that strikes me is that people with disabilities, people with access and functional needs, are thankfully living out in the community. They aren't all existing in institutions. They aren't all having to stay in their homes. And so if you think about it, if you're out at the store shopping for a pair of shoes and emergency happens, how would responders know you're there and know to come to your rescue? And so it's really important to think about what you need, where you might be when something happens, and how you can best prepare yourself. So that's really what our emphasis is. And like Leanne said, at the same time, we are an advisory council to help those that are trying to organize the response, the community response, to be the best at that they can be, and to have the best fit for people who have access and functional needs. And so that's our role. sort of have that dual role, but we really encourage people definitely not to think somebody's gonna come save me. If you can find people that live around you who know you, who know something about what your needs might be, they're probably more likely to be able to come check on you and assist than an emergency responder. That might take a while. So the best thing for everybody, whether you have a disability or an access and functional need or not, is to really think about some of those things. Where are the places that you go? What do you take with you? Now, obviously, you're not going to be able to take everything you might need in an emergency with you, but are there a few things that might be critical that you'd want to have along with you? That's different for everybody, depending on what their needs are. Also, who might be around you at that point? Who might be able to assist you when you're in that environment? Can neighbors, can you start networking with neighbors to figure out, you know, if certain things happen, how can you help each other? And how can you collect some things to help yourself if you are at home? Or how can you prepare something that if you have to leave your home really quickly that you can take with you that will be your most critical needs, that you things you'd want to have with you? And you may not be able to carry all of it, but if you have to eliminate, what are those things that you want to grab and go with? And how are they ready for you or not? So not that the emergency responders won't show up, but that would be best case, but we really all need to plan for worst case.
See, now I had thought that you guys somehow, I apologize for getting this in my head, but somehow I thought you guys were actually the emergency responders. It sounds like you're more education or information rather than actual responders to emergencies, whether they be personal or global or state or whatever that might be. It sounds like you guys are more an educational council. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. You read that right. We are exactly what's in our name. We're an advisory council primarily. And the whole concept is that when people plan for disasters, we need to do that as a whole community. And oftentimes at the government level, when people are working on that, they need to ask, do they have people that are going to have the kinds of maybe some unique needs that they're going to need to respond to in the room to help them figure out how to plan? That's so important to involve a variety of people from the community that have different kinds of experiences, different kinds of needs, to be able to get it right and understand how to plan. So they call that inclusive planning. We were asked by three different agencies of the state to support them in inclusive planning and advise when there's a need and help them connect with the right people. So that's basically what we do.
Let's see if I'm getting this straight. You guys would help them to connect to something like the various brokerages or case management or independent living, but the various other entities that often deal with the disabilities communities.
Well, you're correct. I think of it sort of like a big network. So we are partnering with some of the agencies that have emergency support function responsibilities. We help them because we have networks that go out through the state. Our members on the DMAC have networks. We know of groups. We know of local groups in our community. Leanne is connected to folks in the deaf and hard of hearing community. I am connected with people from what you mentioned, the independent living community. So that's cross disability, peer support and training. So there's other members that have other expertise in other areas. And so we can form this big network across the state to help connect the right people at the right time with those that have the responsibility for the response.
Interesting. As you guys were talking about all this, I was thinking, obviously, some of your stuff is communications, and then some of it's educations. I'm just kind of like wondering, When it comes to the more educational part for people with disabilities, do you guys like put out any materials that a person could go and find, like, you know, maybe a pamphlet on what you should have in your household for if this situation occurs or if that situation occurs, or if you're out in the public and you've got this problem, you should probably have, you know, this contact information on your phone, or you should probably have that in your backpack or whatever. Do you guys ever put out any I guess you would just call them pamphlets?
That's a really good question, John. And a couple of things to take into consideration. One is, we are still a brand new organization. We're only in our third year of active service, if you will, as an advisory council. I mention this because we actually started working together as an active advisory council in January of 2020. We had two meetings, and then in March of 2020, what happened? COVID-19. So instead of having the ability to take the time to do some of the things like what you're asking about all along, we've had to be more focused on assisting sponsoring agencies with coping with the pandemic response. Then, as you may recall, we've had at least one ice storm, we've had floods, and we've had wildfires since. So our energy over the last 2 years, not including this year, has been more focused on helping our agencies to better respond to functional and access needs. That's not to say that there isn't any information out there for people with disabilities. The federal government at ready.gov has resources, some of which is geared toward the various special needs. You know, what do you need to have in, like, your go bag? They've prepared some checklists. You think about your own needs in addition. You need to have your durable medical equipment, you know, some supplies, if possible, set aside to go with that go bag. You know, those kinds of lists are available. We just haven't been in a position to truly work within the disability community yet to help ensure that people are aware of resources like ready.gov. The Red Cross organization also hosts some types of lists like that. Some here in Oregon do as well. As things continue to wind down with the pandemic, we can work with the various communities and say, hey, are you aware that these resources exist? We're just not there yet. Does that help answer part of your question, John?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really does. Like I said, there's these two parts to your organization. There's, you know, the communication and the education. You know, first off, there's the COVID-19. Bam, world pandemic pops up, you know. That must have given you an opportunity to learn to network with other organizations. And then, like you also had said, there'd been like an ice storm, a wildfire. This must have given you a lot of time to kind of like, you know, at least work on the first part of yours, or maybe the second part, I don't know, which is the communication and the networking. And then, you know, as all of this kind of calms down and you guys get more time and you're not dealing with disaster after disaster, you'll be able to get into sending us out more of our educational information that will allow us to, you know, like figure out, hey, what do we need here and what do we need there? I should have probably asked you, hey, how many disasters have you had to deal with? And were you able to get the connections and communications going? That would have definitely been more relevant to this whole disaster time.
Well, actually, John, I think that it was a good question because it gives us an opportunity to talk about those resources that are out there that everybody can explore on their own. Because I remember after Katrina, it seemed like every organization was developing information about what to do to prepare for an emergency. And I just remember the wide variety of those that was out there. we have an opportunity to go to sources like ready.gov and the Red Cross that have done this all over the place for quite a long time, and they've been able to boil it down to the best resources. So I don't think that we will be creating resources as much as pointing people to those that exist. So it gave us an opportunity to talk about that and talk about how important it is for people to know, especially about ready.gov, and to use it. They have some excellent materials. They have materials even about things like people who are energy dependent for some of their medical equipment, things like that. And they have great suggestions about that. And so they have suggestions about people who use service animals, things to consider. So please, I hope everybody who's listening to this will check out ready.gov and start making their own plan.
And you had said one other, the Red Cross. Did I get that one right?
Yeah, the Red Cross also, some of their things, it'll just connect you a lot of times to the ready.gov website. So I think ready.gov is probably primary where I would go searching for information.
All right, so I am wondering about something called public alerts for people within the disabilities community.
The public alert system is also being refined and changed and is in development as well. And we know that that's not something that we operate. So we can't give you a lot of specifics about all of that, but we can tell you if you check out your county's emergency management site, most will have information about how to connect to the systems that are in place to get alerts. And you can get alerts on different devices, through, you know, different methods, through text. There's also alert systems that work through broadcasting systems like television and radio and those kinds of things. Part of what we've been doing in the time since we started is educating ourselves, because most of us on the council are people with lived experience with disability or access and functional needs. And then we have a portion of our council that have their experiences in emergency management. And it's really critical that we all work together to understand things from the other's point of view. That's something we still need to educate ourselves about as a council, about what's going on with the emergency alert system. We do know that there are some things that need to be improved, and those things get talked about when we have the opportunity to talk with people who are involved in those systems. But we haven't taken that on as a project just yet. Our communications committee is talking about it and deciding how we need to prioritize of all the things that we could work on in the emergency management world. What are the things that are most important to people? We know that one comes up a lot, and so that's in our short list.
How can people get involved in Disabilities Emergency Management Advisory Council?
DMAC group isn't just comprised of the members of the advisory council itself. We also have a general membership as well that want to stay in contact with the advisory council. And as we have projects that come up that we need additional help with, who may be willing to volunteer to help us with some of the projects that we're considering. If you would like to be in communication with DMAC, I have a email that people can write to.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. If you go to KBOO Disability Justice, you can see this email address in our program notes. If you are just joining the Disability Justice Program, John Griffiths, the host, is interviewing Leanne Ivers and Shelley Emery of the Disability Emergency Management Advisory Council, known by DMAC. The interview will continue now with Leanne discussing how you might get involved with DMAC.
One way that we could really use help is that in terms of emergency response, we know that things don't always go as smoothly as one might hope. If you might be willing to consider writing at the address that we provided and share your story. What we can do is we can take a look at those stories and learn from them and say, oh, this particular issue seems to be happening more frequently with, say, emergency sheltering and mass care. Maybe this is something that needs to be looked at a little more closely to see if we can't brainstorm some ways to make things a little easier during a time of crisis. So that would be really helpful to us. And if you have questions or concerns about emergency response in general, we'd be happy to see what we can do to answer those.
Leanne, I was going to note too that if, you know, somebody has an experience where they think, boy, something could be improved about this, share what you think the solution might be. The ZMAC doesn't have all the answers. We rely on people out in the community to help us understand things that they're experiencing, ideas about how to make improvements. We were talking about how to engage, and I think too, we have certain periods of the year where people, where we do a recruitment phase for the council, and we can do that quarterly, but there's usually an annual around the beginning of the year where we have a real, a time where we're looking really heavily at recruitment. And so people can send messages to that accessibility.team@dhsoha.state.or.us. You know, if they're interested in membership, if they're interested in just getting information that the council sends out, because we do, like even in the wildfires, we sent out information to a broad group of disability organizations, asking them to help disseminate that information further about resources that were available for a particular disaster. So that's one way for people to get involved. And I also think it's so critical for you to start thinking about getting involved at your local community. Maybe there's an advisory council you could be involved with there, or maybe you can start one. Just been talking with a student who's actually starting one in the county I live in. And so it's exciting to see people doing that at the local level, reaching out to their emergency manager. How can I help?
I'd actually like to make one additional point, and that's something that we both haven't exactly explained very clearly. When a disaster happens, it's considered local at first, meaning within the city or county area first. So they're the ones that do the first response. If the city and or county does not have enough resources to meet the immediate need of that area, then they reach out to the state level, which is where we're at DMAC. They reach out to the state emergency management resources and say, hey, can you send some resources down to help us? That's why Shelley is really emphasizing why it's so important to consider getting involved at your local level, at your city or county level emergency management organization first. Yes, we love to have people be interested in DMAC at the state level, but just remember emergency, local response first, state second.
I hope that your message reaches many people in the audience. And I want to thank you, the both of you, for coming in.
John, thank you so much for having us. Really appreciate the opportunity to get the message out there and encourage people to really start thinking about what they need to do for themselves to prepare.
Absolutely. And not only that, once they've figured out what they can do for themselves and their families, see if they can think about what they can help the unique community do. Not just the community abroad, you know, the broad community that they live in, but their own community, whether that be the deaf and hard of hearing community in my case, or the deaf blind community. You know, think about how to help your community like that become more prepared for an emergency as well.
Thank you.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.